A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy. We are golding.com. Accountants extraordinaire. Hi, how are you? This week I have got a very exciting guest. You may or may not know him, depending on how you found this podcast. He's a very, very successful DJ called Funkcase. And he works, well, he's on the agency that I work for. And we had a little chat. And I was like, come on my podcast. Because, well, as you'll hear, this is now two podcasts. Because we just talked for 2 hours. And I really enjoyed our chat. He's very knowledgeable about lots of things that I know nothing about. So I always like to learn. But yeah, we chatted about his music, his gaming, and a few interesting things about how technology works. Because I know nothing. But yeah, I hope you enjoy it. And part two will be next week. It's just, I really like chatting. And we had such a good old chinwag. And I'm actually, as I record this now, I'm doing a podcast with his better half tomorrow about her business. So I'm excited about that. And I'll see if she talks as much as him. But yeah, enjoy.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Work. Work.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, it's like a proper setup.
Yeah, yeah, it is, yeah, it is. Isn't it? Yeah. I can put Jamaica in the background if it makes you happy. I'm on holiday. Ooh. I'm on holiday. They do all these effects on you, don't they? So it might work.
I think they do what on they do stuff on Zoom, don't they? You can have like a background on Zoom.
Yeah. I could change my background. I could be in a mansion. I'm doing really well as phone cases, you can tell by my 85 bedroom house. 64 bathrooms.
Would you get an 85 bedroom house?
Nah, you know what's crazy? I've been watching videos on YouTube of all these rich people's houses, because there's these people who do, like, they're not estate agents, but they're people that take you around houses on YouTube, really expensive houses. And I've been watching it with Emma, and I've been like, I don't know if I'd like to live there, because it just, I feel like it would be horrible to clean. Even, you know, even at that money, like, you're going to get loads of maids and stuff. You're going to have people around your house constantly. You'd lose the cats, you know, like, all sorts of stuff. So, yeah.
That's because my eldest daughter, she always says, oh, when we get a mansion, I was like, I don't want a mansion. I would spend my whole time cleaning the fucking thing. And I mean, I know obviously if you had a mansion, you'd have a cleaner.
Yeah.
But even so, it's just like the idea of having surplus bedrooms that you don't need that are just going to sit empty all day with all that's going, the problems that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
I couldn't live like that. I'd feel too guilty.
I don't know. I think it's probably relative to the person, but I think that like, living in somewhere like that, it's like if you've worked really hard for it, then you've rewarded yourself. If you were gifted it, if it was an inheritance, if you went, here's 50 million, and you went, fuck yeah, here's a 49 million house I'm going to live in.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Just earn more money with that money. I always feel like I wouldn't feel guilty if I did things that benefited other people with that money, if that makes sense. So like, are we recording, by the way? Are we recording now? Are we in the podcast
yet? Yeah, I'm recording. Well, I mean, we can be. Are you recording?
I mean, no, you need to do a proper intro, don't you, or anything like that? So.
Oh, yeah. I'm very professional.
I just looked at my recording, and for some reason it stopped. I don't know why, so I'll restart it.
Oh, that's okay.
It's for some reason it's freaking out. I don't know what it is. I know. Seems to be okay. I've just checked that it worked. It's like stuttering for some reason. I don't know why. So yeah, did you want to do your? Do you need to do an intro?
I'm going to do an intro.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
So today, I'm joined by the wonderful Funkcase.
Good day.
And I do laugh every time I say that name, or when I see the name, I laugh. So I've got to start off. Where did it come from?
Well, first,
it's not your surname.
My mum. No, the first. So the start. Okay, before I mention that, did you get the joke when you first said the name, like straight away, or did it take a while for it to kick it? You did get okay.
No, I know. Yeah.
But that's the thing that I always.
Basildon.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense then. But like apples and pears and all that, Murray Mint. But like, I always think that like it's probably about 50-50 split. People would get the joke instantly, or they go, "What was that a case of funds?" I don't know what. And then 3 years down the line, they either click or they mention it. Someone else mentions it, and they're like, "Oh, my god, I can't believe it!" I get this all the time. People are like sending me messages like, "Yo, I'm having an argument at a party. We're all drunk, but." We need you to settle this score right now. Like, is your name Compass? And I'm like, yes. Yes, it is. So the origin of that is that before I was doing Funkcase, I was a drum and bass producer called DJ Dose. And back in 2009, when I started the project, sort of early 2009, dubstep was kind of edging in as a genre, but wasn't that popular. So like, in the drum and bass world, it was frowned upon to go to dubstep, basically. So anyone who went to dubstep was known as a bandwagoner, because dubstep wasn't a bandwagon, but it was like if you left the D&B scene for dubstep, you were a bandwagoner. It's kind of a weird situation. Yeah. I think looking back now, a lot of the guys who thought that would probably think they're an idiot. They probably think, oh, why did I think like that? But you know, we're all young. But that being said, I didn't like dubstep when I first made it, and my friend who had a dubstep radio show asked me to make him some dub plates for his radio show just for fun, because I just like writing stuff for fun. So I started writing these tracks for him. I was like, whatever, I'll just bang a few out. And he said they were popping off in the radio show, and I was like, right. And then I made a couple more, and I sent them to Chrissy Chris, because I knew Chrissy Chris through him playing my music on Radio 1.
Yep.
So he's the one. The moment that really clicked, right, it was popping off, and I had a couple of dubstep releases, and I still was a bit iffy about dubstep, but at this point I was still broke and I was trying to get money. So I was like, all right, label, who wants my music, come release it. And then the moment that it clicked was Chrissy Chris played on Primetime Radio 1. He was playing a festival with, I think, Harry Shotter as the MC or someone like that. And he was playing drum and bass, and then he dropped dubstep, and he started his set with my track, So Vex, which came out on Circus. Yeah. And it got like three or four rewinds, literally on primetime radio live. And it was, I was like, what? And the crowd were going mental. The MC was going mental. It was getting pulled up. And it was just like this moment where I was like, this is a thing. I can do something with this. I've been struggling for like five years as a drum and bass producer. So I invented Funkcase to hide I was DJ Dose, because I couldn't call myself DJ Dose. I would have preferably liked to call myself DJ Dose, but thank God I didn't. So, ended up being Funkcase as a joke name. And
Was that a joke name that you used?
That was... I came up... My friend who I made the dub plates for, I told him I couldn't use DJ Dose. So we talked about names, and I kind of came up with, like, Hick Dead, which is Dickhead, Billy Sarsted, which is, as you will know, and Frontcase. And we ended up sticking with Frontcase. And I remember laughing my head off at seeing my name on a flyer for the first time back when I started. So, yeah, that's the origin of it. So, yeah, it's just, I didn't like it. And it was a joke name that ended up sticking. But yeah, it's a good name, I think, because you can Google Frontcase and it's just name. Me, innit? It's not like, type in, if you type in crafty, you know, like you're going to get, you're going to get like all these arts and crafts websites and stuff like that. So, yeah. Love you, love you, Paul.
You wear a mask, don't you?
Again, that was my whole career is an accident. My life is an accident, but my whole career is an accident. my career is an accident. So my name was started because I didn't want to be known who I was. I wore a mask because I was dared to wear it. So the mask came from my first ever show I played in my hometown, Room 2, to six people, five being my own friends, and one of my friends who was with me saw a mask in my bag, and the mask came from the night before I played my first show. I was a graffiti artist. I've been a graffiti artist since I was like 14. And I was like 23 at this point. So I was like 10 years deep. But I'd been booked to do graffiti at a university ball event, like a festival for university students and stuff like that. So I went and I did graffiti there, but it was a dress-up event. And I didn't have anything to dress up, so I just went to Tesco. And I just bought the crappiest thing I could find for cheap. And I just wore that while spraying. But I didn't remove the whole fit. I didn't remove the whole suit from my bag when I played my first show. So the mask was still in there by accident. And when I pulled my CDs out, not CDJs. I pulled my CDs out to play them. And my friend saw the mask and was like, go on, wear it. And I don't really remember it perfectly, but he just convinced me to wear it. And it just kind of stuck, so...
Does it not get really hot?
It gets insanely hot. I have no cooling in there. It's like... Wait, have I got it here? I think I might have it here. Oh, no, I don't have it here. I thought I did.
Is it the same one, or have you changed it?
Nah, we have... I had the same one for a whole decade, actually.
Oh, wow.
But I had multiple. I have multiple, and I kept... one got stolen, one was, like, torn to shreds, one was, like, it barely fit me anymore, one was, like... Someone stole that one as well, like mid on tour in America. So it got to the point where I was like, I can't find these anywhere on the online anymore. I might as well just make my own one. So I ended up getting my own one. So this is a custom design we have right now. So we're going to kind of redesign these probably every 3 to 4 years. So I'm due this year / next year to maybe make a new one, but I don't want to change it too much. You know, I kind of want these masks to feel like Frontcase 2.0, 3.0 kind of thing, rather than just just revamping my image. You know, so it feels familiar, but it's cooler. You know, so
can you not make them so they aren't as uncomfortable, or is it pretty much?
Yeah, I mean, there is that.
You got something on your face.
The problem is, there's compromises with masks. It's like, do you want to wear? Okay, let's say, do you want to wear elastic? Elastic is good because it hugs the face and it's comfortable, but you can't really do designs with elastic. You know, like latex sort of stuff, like that. Anything like that, like the stuff leggings are worn, you're made of. You know that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it hugs your face. But they don't last over time. They break easy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's there's compromises. So if you want like a durable mask, you have to make it out of something that's going to make you hot as fuck, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's,
So do you go for it when you're DJing?
I go for it, yeah. That's kind of my thing. That's my forte, is my energy on stage. And I'm still doing that now. I'm nearly 36 and I'm definitely feeling it, but I'm not stopping. But
Do you still love it as much as you did?
1,000,000%. 1,000,000. I mean, it's not. So obviously, right? Everyone's going to say, shut up. I do love it. I love it so much. That being said, there are annoyances of what happens in my, you know, like travel restrictions and cancellations of flights and COVID testing every week and, you know, that sort of stuff. So all these annoyances, yes, but it's like any dream job is going to have any negative, you know? You could be, like, you could aspire to be a game tester. You could play games all day. But then it gets to a point where you're just sick of playing the same game over and over again to test for bugs, you know, that sort of stuff. So there's negatives in every job. So, yes, I live a great life, but a DJ life is not paradise. I promise. It's not paradise whatsoever. It's really not. So,
Who was I talking to the other day talking about touring and how hard it is? Like, if you're an artist and you go on tour all the time, touring's not a nice life.
Nah, it's not. It really
isn't.
It's
amazing playing to people.
Yeah.
But you're not at home. You're travelling all the time, especially if you do somewhere like America.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... People think, oh, that's the life, but actually...
I literally can't complain, because I'd rather this than I was working 69 hours a week. over two jobs before Phone Case.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was crazy working in an office.
What did you do?
So I worked in an office, which I was scammed into doing by the what's it called? When you go to college, but you work.
Oh, okay, like an apprenticeship.
Apprenticeship, yeah. So I did an apprenticeship, and I went in to specifically do something, and they scammed me into doing a different course, and I ended up doing something I didn't want to do. So I ended up getting a job through that doing that that course, and on the side of that, I was working with my mum. She was the manager of a care home, and I was caring for old people. So 6 and 9 hour weeks. So then on Sundays and Thursdays, I would do overnight shifts, 8 till 8. 12 hours, so 24 hours on that, and then I was doing the rest of the hours in the office.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, and I was on miserable money as well. I was constantly in a minus.
I
was constantly in a minus.
Wow.
And coincidentally as well with that whole situation is that I lost my job in the office because that's when the economy crashed, 2009, and they couldn't sustain, and they had to get rid of a bunch of people. So I was cut off, but that coincidentally gave me the time to write Funk Case music. So it's like... one door closes, you know, or it was like fate. I don't know what you want to call it, but that's exactly
sometimes
what it was.
Sometimes you need a push, I think. Like, you know, you wouldn't have left your job.
No.
To do stuff, would
no,
you?
Not in a million years, no. Yeah. I hated it. I did not enjoy that job. I liked the people, a good percentage of the people. But the job itself was insanely tedious and miserable, to be honest. It was answering phones and folding paper and being treated like an idiot. They called me the print monkey. That's literally what my name was in the office. Because I was the guy that they would go, we need 10 photocopies of this. So I'd go and photocopy those, and they'd go, print these out and unfold them. And it was like papers. I'm not joking. I don't even know how big they were. They were like A1 or bigger than that. Like they were like this big.
Yeah.
And I had to fold those into like one eighth of the size of it so it fit in an envelope. And I'd have to do that over like hundreds and hundreds of papers. So I'd be there folding all day, just folding, miserable. My hands getting dry. Ink getting on my skin, like people calling me print monkey all the time, like giving me nicknames and stuff. I was just like, this is miserable. But it paid the bills, so I just did it. You just got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, no, totally. I hear that.
So,
but how amazing is it that now you've got, how many followers have you got on Instagram?
158,000 or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's not, it's all in, it's relativity, isn't it? It's like people follow you, but not everyone responds to what you're doing, you know? There's like, people are like, why do you only get, you know, 2 or 3,000 likes on a picture? Kanye West has millions of followers and he gets about 100K followers, you know, 100K likes on stuff. So
yeah,
it's relative.
Because you don't fucking see anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Neither do you.
Yeah,
like, exactly. I see the same shit from the same people, which is lovely because I love them. But I follow loads of people and I never see anything from them.
So it's an algorithm thing. So this is a whole other can of worms opening up here. But Instagram has basically gone to a model where they want you to pay to be noticed. And it's Facebook, isn't it? That's the problem. So,
yeah.
If you interact with that person enough, that algorithm does then set you into their algorithm. But if you don't, and people aren't seeing what you're doing, and your likes are low, then they go, "Whoa, your likes are low. Guess what? We've got this special deal on today. If you spend £500, we'll get you to 6 people." Yeah, so, yeah, that's the issue. And so,
So, how did you come to music?
My mum. My mum's a DJ.
I
grew up around watching my mum do copious drugs and DJ, basically.
What music did she DJ?
She was so my mum was a fairly well-known UK-only, not drum and bass DJ. She was a happy hardcore DJ. She used to DJ happy hardcore. Back when it was just happy hardcore.
Yeah.
It was like that classic fastest 4/4 style. She was that DJ, and she would DJ around events in Bournemouth, but she would also DJ around events called Tasmania. And that was like the big event for Happy Hardcore. And she was quite a fairly well-known DJ. She's kind of not a resident, but she would play a lot for that company.
Yeah.
And then she was always out playing shows or out getting mashed. She won't mind me saying. She's not really into that stuff anymore. But like, yeah, she and I would be at home, you know, lying on the couch watching whatever on TV. I don't know, Texas Laboratory or whatever was on, or wrestling. But every single day, she would be on the deck. She had a special room where she had decks in. She had friends around partying or just mixing, all that sort of stuff. Every single day of my damn existence from birth until the moment I decided I liked it was me being surrounded by partying or loud music or happy hardcore.
Wow.
And then, but the problem with my mum's career was that the reason she never got further than where she did was because there was a moment in music where happy hardcore went to jungle or hardcore.
Yeah.
Drum and bass was kind of born through jungle. And so jungle being the sort of the originator, jungle and hardcore split from happy hardcore, and people went one way and others went. So my mum went to jungle and her, and she was also fighting for her name against a producer called DJ Vortex. And he was getting a bit of traction. And in the end, she lost her name. So she changed the name. And then I kind of fucked her career. So she ended up not getting out of the UK. And then, yeah, so that kind of mashed her career to a point where she was just ended up being a local. But so from that.
It's hard, I think, for women as well. In the, I mean, I've worked with DJs for, well, ever since I left university. And I can count the amount of female DJs I know.
So 2002? Yeah, 2002, you left uni, you know, not long ago, 2012, 2020. It's just not long ago,
I
right?
I had to
wrong
think then.
Yeah.
I don't even know when I left university. Fuck, 98, I think I left uni.
Was it? I left, I started high school in 97. So you're not too far off me.
I'm 44.
Yeah, well, 36 in July.
Yeah. So. Yes, the same.
Yes.
But yeah, once it gets past 30, it's all the same.
I know, everyone just starts aching. Yeah, welcome to the Age Podcast, where we just moan about age. If you don't know about age, we're going to tell you right now. No, but
so, was she young when she had you?
Yeah, she was 19. I was an accident.
Oh, wow.
Or as my mum calls me, a surprise.
Yeah, I was a surprise.
Yeah, so I was a surprise. But I was, a lot of stuff was stacked against my mum at that time. She didn't have a very good relationship with her parents. And she was a single mum with, she basically had to work like, I don't know, she was like working like 11, 12, 15 cleaning jobs at the same time, you know, just kind of going to rich people's houses and cleaning and that sort of stuff. So she had a lot of struggle in her life, but through that all, she was, you know, DJing basically to keep herself sane. So yeah, so from that story, my background came from when I was.
So did you hate it when you were little? Did you annoy the fuck?
I didn't
out
like
it.
My mom used to drive. My mom used to drive me to school in an orange VW Beetle with happy hardcore blazing out of it. Like she would blaze tape packs out of it, and I was like, "Mom, I'm gonna get bullied. Stop." And I'll be sitting in the seat, just like, oh, "I can't stand this. Can you drop me off further away or something?"
Oh my God, she was the coolest mum ever.
Yeah, but that's the thing. To us, you know, we think that's the coolest thing I've ever heard. But to kids who are 14, you know, just like. You just hear a car go boom, 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 boom. You know, that sort of stuff. You're thinking, what the fuck is, I'm going to beat his ass later on. So yeah, it was a weird situation, but I got to appreciate it when I was, I think I'm 16 or 18 or 17, that sort of scope of area. And she would play D&B every day. And at this point I was wearing hoodies. My hair was down past my shoulders, like death metal. I hated everything electronic. I was all into bands and that sort of stuff. And I heard one track on by Twisted Individual called Bandwagon Blues. And I was like, I feel like this is a cool track. And then my brain went, this is a good track. I like this track. And then for some reason, I went from that into like walking into my mum's room like, hey, like, can I just have a go on these decks? Like, because I used to watch her and I knew, I learned to drive through watching my mum drive every day, that sort of stuff. Like, I don't drive. Actually legally, but I know how to drive because I can just watch what people do and I know how to do it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I literally stepped up to the decks, never mixed in my life, and I pretty much mixed there and then. My mum was like, what the hell? She was like, I've been learning for years. How have you done this? So that moment was like, okay. And then I started buying vinyls, D&B vinyls, my own vinyls, and then I started practicing in the room. And then that went to, I ended up joining my mum's radio show. With all the MC crew and that sort of stuff. And I was in my mum's D&B crew and that sort of stuff. And then that turned me into being a producer eventually from messing around on music by the PlayStation. You know, there was a game called Music on PlayStation. That's how I started my career. But I didn't know that I liked writing music. I thought it was a game. You know, I was just making music. Yeah. But I couldn't stop making music. It never clicked that I could be a thing.
Did you play anything? Did you play any instruments?
Yeah, I've been playing drums since I was 14 and guitar since I was 16.
Okay.
So at that point, I've been playing guitar. I've been in bands as well. I love bands. But it didn't, that sort of thing, like, I always thought I was just going to be in a band. It never clicked that I could write music for a job, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah I just kept making music, just not thinking about it. And then one day I got a copy of Reason from my mum's boyfriend, who was a year older than me. My mum's a bit of a cougar. She did like him young. That being said, the reason for that is because my mum thought he lied to her. They met at New Year's at a party and they kissed. He told her he was older and she told him she was younger. So it kind of worked, you know. And yeah, I think, was he a year or was he 3 years, 4 years? I don't know. It's sort of like, it wasn't long.
Yeah.
And then he taught me how to use Reason instead of music on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And that turned into, I'm finishing tracks now. And then that turned into, this label wants my track now. That turned into vinyl releases now. And then it's just spiral from
there. So how did you get the labels to hear it? Did you have labels that you knew that you liked that you sent it to? Or were you kind of, because you were in that world anyway, did your mum know people? And
no, mum knew no one. It was kind of like the internet was just starting to kick off and it was like AOL Instant Messenger, AIM, if you're familiar.
I remember AIM.
And AIM was like, God. AIM had a feature on it where it would auto accept files and there was record labels. And I got in touch with a company who were doing remixes and I did a remix for a track and they loved the remix, but they couldn't put it out because of their own rules. And they said, can we hear some more? And I sent them a track and that was my first release. It was a track called Gunslinger and Deep Out, I think it was called. It was my first ever vinyl. And that was a mind-blowing moment because my mum's never had a vinyl release in her life. So to see her son with his own like white label and his own full release, she was like, mind-blown. So yeah, that was the moment where it clicked. So like, this could be a thing.
Yeah.
But for them, 5 years, I spent miserable years of my drum and bass life trying to make it, not getting anywhere. So, yeah. But it was a very closed off genre, I can't lie. EMB was a very closed off genre. Crafty would probably tell you the same thing, to be honest.
Really?
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I know Zinc. That's who I know for drum and bass.
I can't help but, like, every time I think about that man, I just keep reminding. He keeps telling me that when you see Swanee, call him Russell. That's what he keeps telling me every time I see him. Say hello to Russell. Some weird story about him thinking his name was Russell and it wasn't. It ended up being his name, even though his name's Simon. So, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't... Yeah. I suppose it all depends. It's all who you know, isn't it, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Everything. Especially if the scene's closed off, like drum and bass was, you had to know someone in the scene to get in. That's why I felt like I was making headway when I spoke to Chrissy Chris a lot. Chris was just a guy that played music on the radio. And then eventually we started talking more and we got, you know, not close, but we were on talking terms at that point. And I was like, wow, yeah, I'm talking talking terms with a Radio 1 DJ. What's going on? He's playing out all the time and he's got D&B releases and stuff like that. And that was a moment when I felt like headway was happening. And like I say, when the dubstep tracks were being played out, they were blowing up. But shortly before that, I had a D&B track I'd made called The Devil. And Chrissy played that on his Radio 1 show and he pulled it up on Radio 1 and it was his track of the week. That was the moment where I was like, I'm getting somewhere now. I'd spent, you know, 4 years in a DMB scene, like trying to get somewhere. And finally I've got a track of the week on Radio 1. So that was like the first like confidence boost. And then Funcase rewinds in that festival on Primetime Radio 1. Chris, I owe a lot to Chrissy Chris. I tell this to everyone. I owe a lot to Chrissy Chris. He kickstarted a lot of my career and he's very, very underrated as a producer. And extremely important in the dubstep scene, actually, in the early dubstep scene. Can't lie. He deserves it.
So when you had that play on Radio 1 then, how soon after that, how long did it take for you to get to where you are? Because you're massive, aren't you?
I mean, depends on what you define as that, but, you know.
Well, no, you are, aren't you? I mean, you're.
I mean, I do okay. I don't. I'm not DJ Snake or Steve Aoki. Let's put it that way. But I'm doing. I'm touring the world, so I can't complain. What was like the definitive moment? Is what you're saying, or?
Yeah, well, I suppose because it's. What's that saying? Where it takes years of work to become an overnight success.
Yeah,
I think. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, oh my God, this is the next best thing. And then all of a sudden you're a star, but they don't know that actually you've been fucking working at it for 10 years.
Yeah, there is that. There's a lot of that. There's also a case of it only takes one track. That's kind of my version of that. Yeah. But that doesn't sometimes equate to years of effort. It can be someone can be making tracks for 6 months and be fairly good at the basics. And then suddenly they've got the biggest track in history. You know, it's like it only takes one track. So.
But then equally, you have to follow that track up as well, because everyone can have a hit, but
yeah, I've seen the wave get destroyed. I've seen artists fall at the first hurdle, so yeah, that's definitely true. But yeah, I don't know, it's just I think it does take a lot of patience and a lot of effort. It took me a long time to get noticed, but some people take 6 months, some people take 6 years. There's a guy I signed to my record label. I'm sure we'll get onto that later on, but there's a guy I signed to my record label. He's been writing music for 8 years, never had a single release. And he's writing amazing music. And I just started releasing to him. He's like, I'm so grateful. I'm like, where have you been, dude? What have you been doing for 8 years with all this good music? So, yeah.
But it's the right person, wasn't it? Because I used to make music. I think I just did it for about 10 years. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore.
What happened? Why stop?
I couldn't take the rejection. It was too much. It nearly happened so many times. And then it didn't. Like, I'll tell you what, the last thing that did it was Scream.
Right.
Was supposed to produce the album, and that was, and he agreed to do it just before the LaRue track.
Right.
So obviously, that happened for him, and he wasn't going to do it anymore. And I was like, do you know what? I just can't. I don't want to have babies. I think I was about 33 at that point, and I was like, I just want to have a baby.
Oh, really? That's an aggressive switch from I want to tour the world to I want to have a baby.
Well, I think I loved making music. I loved writing. But I didn't love performing so much.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a few people like that. I think Flux Pavilion's like that too. I think he likes performing, but I think if he had the choice, he would produce over playing shows for sure. I'm the opposite. I'm definitely more of an on the stage guy.
Yeah, I think that you're either like that or you're not. And it wasn't really. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah, you gotta love it for sure. It's for especially like all those negatives we're talking about, and probably we'll go into eventually. You definitely gotta have a level of love and patience with going through that sort of stuff.
So I have a good friend who was a recording artist, and he nearly quit when they went on tour in America because he was just on this van, and he was like, "I would rather be back at HMV where we met, working behind the till, than doing this shit anymore." And he couldn't believe that he was so ungrateful for everyone. You know, he's like, "I'm touring fucking America," but he hated it.
It's a van, though. It's different. That's different. That's cramped up for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, bored. You know, wishing you weren't cramped up in a van, basically.
Yeah.
For me, I get to fly and I get to stay in hotels, so there's a level of glamour attached to that in comparison to a van. But that being said, there is a. But that's the thing. He was never cut out for it. That's the thing. If you have genuine passion, I would have swam to America at one point. You know, like when I was doing 6 to 9 hours a week, and someone said, "If you swim to America, we'll give you a tour and we'll give you 10,000." I'd have gone. I literally will drink the water while I'm on the way. I won't stop for food or anything. I will go. Like, if you have the passion for it, it doesn't matter what. I think he's never cut out for it. I think some people just aren't cut out for it. I think they like the idea of it, and I think when they get a slice of something, they go. Someone goes, "Oh, we've got a tour for you." And in your head, you're going, "Don't do it. You know you won't like it." But your first thought is money. Or, wow, maybe I'll meet someone big. Or maybe it'll blow up. You know, maybe I'll have a private jet in 3. You know, there's things that go on in your head, which it's kind of like myself with previous girlfriends. Now, I'm not going to call anyone out, but there were red flags at early signs. And because I was so desperate to be with someone, I decided to ignore them. You know, it's the same sort of thing. So when the red flags happen in your head, but you're so desperate for something to work, you just ignore it. That's kind of, I can imagine that's exactly what he did. Yeah.
That is my thing, is your first, what's the word? Impressions are always right.
Mm-hmm.
Always right.
Yeah.
Don't ever ignore the red flags.
No, the red flags are red flags for a reason.
He loved doing it. I think it was a bad moment that he was having at that time when he was just like, I just want to quit. There was a lot of other stuff going on. It was kind of, he was in a partnership and it was kind of coming towards the end of that, and you know, but I do think it is a hard job. All jobs are fucking hard, aren't they? No one's got an easy
job.
You said at the beginning, it's, you know, Matt, what you do, it gets boring eventually.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I mean, there's obviously, like I said, there's going to be negatives involved with it.
Yeah.
People say to me all the time, like, someone said to me, I mentioned this on Twitter a few times in the last year, actually. Someone once said to me, what's it like being a millionaire? And I'm like, you have such a skewed view of what DJs earn. And my girlfriend told me that she went on a forum years ago and they were talking about what the DJs possibly earn at a festival. And it was a festival I was playing at, and it's a all bass head festival called Lost Lands, right? So this is all basically... Yeah. Good size level dubstep producers, but we're not talking like, you know, Steve Aoki or David Guetta sort of money. This is all like very comfortable but not very insane money. But they were all going through it. They were like, he earns 70 grand, he earns 150, and like, I'm just like, are you kidding me? Yeah, for one hour on stage. It's a 1 hour on stage. Like, they were kind of going through each DJ and they were kind of working out, and I'm like, people have such a skewed view of what we earn. Yeah. Like, yeah. even if, right, let's say you don't see my statements of who takes cuts, right? When you see, when promoters explain, like, oh, I paid him this much money, right? People think, wow, do you see my statements? Do you know how much tax I pay? Like, it's actually insane. You would cry if you'd seen how much I could earn before management, agency, double tax. You know, it's like there's hotels and flights and everything like that. And you're like, oh, oh, I spent a month just for this amount. Okay. Well, it's a good amount. I'm not going to complain, but this could have been much more, you know. So
it is also amusing that they think the festival actually makes that much money, so it can pay the artists.
Yeah, they probably think, oh, they make it's 40 like they grand. They make 40 million easy. Idea. They make 40 million easy. It's not a problem. They'll just pay whatever to the artists, and then they make 40. I heard a rumor. I don't know this off actual proper sourcing, but I heard a rumor from people that I know who are in the scene that EDC either doesn't make money or they barely break even. And EDC is like the biggest festival in America, in Las Vegas. It's like 250,000 people. Their tickets are insane amounts of money, but they put so much money into production and everything involved that generally they're just not making money. It's just not making money.
I know there's another festival that I know, which is a massive festival, and I know that they literally do it for the love. They're not making any money. I think they break even, but they're definitely not making any money out of it.
I think the goal in these sort of things though is that you get the brand to a level where you can sell it, and then that's where the money comes from. So you might break even every year, or you might lose a little bit of money, that sort of stuff, but eventually you can sell it to a big, I don't know, let's just say Live Nation steps in and they go, we'll give you 80 million for this thing, and you think, oh god, I've been breaking even for 20 years for this moment, thank you. And suddenly that's it. So it's a weird situation, but I don't know, it's the people. I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't have a skewed view, because obviously, if they don't know anything about the scene, they just assume they're earning loads of money. But that being said, you know. Yeah.
Well, I suppose you hear about the massive superstar DJs, don't you? Like David Guetta and whatever, and you know how much they earn, and you just think, oh, well, that's how much they earn. But it's like, no.
Yeah, I heard a rumor as well that Calvin Harris makes $1 million a set in when he does like, I think he does like 2-3 hour sets at these Las Vegas hotels.
And yeah, but see, in Vegas, I could see that happening.
Well, it's disposable income, because these casinos must make insane amounts of money per day anyway. Like, they'll probably have to do one day of trading and pay Calvin Harris that money.
That wouldn't surprise me. You know? Like, plus, Vegas can be really pricey as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
So, that I mean, but then again, obviously it's an insane amount of money. He obviously claims an insane amount of money from it, but he's not earning $1 million. He's probably earning, at best, probably around, I'm going to say, maximum 200K. From that, just because of the amount of cuts that come out, he's probably got like 8 managers, songwriters to pay, you know, like 2 agents, like he's probably multiple taxes, like he's probably got the cuts galore coming out of it. So
I don't know, obviously it's an insane amount of tax laws,
but it's obviously an insane amount of money, obviously, but it's just not a million, is it? It's just not a million.
No, so I just be walking away with that.
That's what I'm saying. So I always try and explain this to people. I'm like, even if you get told by a promoter, I earn, I don't know, whatever money, I'm going to be earning about 20% of that maximum, like because it's just so horrendous. Oh, yeah.
So when did you get signed?
So Circus signed me. That was the first ever proper signing, which is funny because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was my first signing because the funny part about that is that I'd spent obviously all this time in drum and bass, and I'd spent all my time not being paid for these releases in drum and bass. I got paid for... I think I have like nearly 20 vinyl releases, and I think I've been paid for 2 of them. And like even early dubstep, I wasn't paid for them because the distributors went down. They went down for bankruptcy or whatever. But...
Oh, sorry, 2 seconds. My door's just gone.
That's right.
I have no idea who it is. Oh my god, it's 8 o'clock at night. No one ever comes around.
Welcome to the live podcast on Mama Mama, sponsored by Maximum Boost.
Oh, we were going to get you to do things, weren't we? For the other podcast.
Not illegal stuff, by the way. If anyone's any police listening, things. That can mean anything.
Legal things.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Wait, I forgot the question. Was. You were...
Let's get signed. When you got signed?
Yeah, so Circus was my first... So when I was doing drum and bass, I had maybe 18 to 20 vinyls. I got paid for 2 of them. And then even in the early dubstep days, distributors went down. I didn't get paid for a load of releases then. But... It was always a thing in drum and bass to where don't sign exclusive. Do not sign exclusive. It's the worst thing you could do. And I'd been talking to Dr. P. Sean for a long time because he'd been Picto in drum and bass world. So we were kind of always talking. That being said, I say talking. Sean's response, no joke, every time was one word, and it was usually lol. So like, you know, and you know what Sean's like if you've ever met him. That is literally Sean. So yeah, he's just not really a responsive guy. We got talking one day randomly out of the blue, and he was telling me, I've been making dubstep. And I was like, what? So have I. What do you mean? And we exchanged music, and he sent me the most amazing dubstep, and I sent him my dubstep. He's like, what the hell? This is amazing. So we just had this music. We didn't, no shows, no nothing. And then Sean went, I'm starting the label, like, one day, and was like, do you want to release these on it? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then, like, not too long after that, I'm going to say maybe a year after I signed my first tracks, they went, we've got a contract for you. And I was like, oh no, I'm about to say no, and I'm going to piss these guys off, and I'm going to lose my label, and you know, that sort of stuff. But someone in me told me to sign, and it was the best thing I ever did, because Circus was, you know, one of the most prominent labels in dubstep, you know, in the come up. So I owe a lot to dubstep. I owe a lot, hell of a lot to Circus. You know, the growth of Circus may have made me bigger. You know, if I wasn't on Circus, would I be as big? Probably not. So, you know, I owe a lot to that label. I'm still here today, 13 years later, on the same label. So,
wow, so, 13 years.
13 years as Front Case, 2009. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fucking hell.
I know, dude. I know.
God.
I know.
So, when did you start your label?
My label started last year, actually.
Okay.
It's a brand already. It's been a brand since 20. I've had it drawn. I've always wanted my own label and my own clothing label for like the longest time. I've literally wanted that for ages. And I've always toyed with the idea.
By the way.
Oh yeah, this is not my label, but this is a label that hooked me out free stuff, Civil Regime. Shout out to the guys. These are an American company. But I actually do have a hoodie coming out on the next Deep Emo run. This is exclusive information actually for the Mama Mama podcast. Oh. Where it's a tie-dye style with cool writing on it. So yeah, it's not out yet, but it will be out soon. But yeah.
So what is your label called?
DPMO. Don't piss me off. You know that old London saying? You know, it's like when someone either makes you laugh or you don't want them to make you angry, it's just, don't piss me off. So I had a track called Don't Piss Me Off, and it became my brand. I was going to be called Ghosts. I wanted to name my brand after like a popular track of mine in the scene. So there was like Ghosts, Don't Piss Me Off, which is now DPMO, and some other names. And I tried to go for Ghosts, but I couldn't write a good logo. I couldn't do a good logo for Ghosts, because Ghosts is like...
Ghost already isn't there.
There's Ghost energy drink. I think there's a Ghost clothing label, but it's like, how do you do a serious looking clothing label with like a cartoon ghost on the front of it? You know, there's not really good looking ghosts.
Yeah.
But serious clothing labels. So it's kind of, I was always a bit on the edge with that one. And then DPMO happened, and I just designed the logo with a Sharpie, and then put it into Photoshop and made it black. But yeah, that was dreamt up for years. And then we started 2016. Was the first mock-ups of the clothing, and 2017 was the official first release of the clothing. So the clothing came first, and we've been doing the clothing for years, and then last year, 3-4 years in, we started the label through the team at Circus, who are sort of doing the back end of it now. I'm doing the A&R, and I'm the owner. So yeah, it's exciting stuff.
It's exciting.
It's well exciting. It's tiring. Yeah. It's tiring listening to lots of bad music and then finding lots of good music in between. And that's not a diss to anyone, because some people are just ready and some people aren't. Some people can, maybe some people can't. That's just life. But it's tiring to listen to that stuff over and over again. Because so back in your DJ days, did you ever go to a record shop and just listen to so many records over and over again, and then the mediocre one sounds amazing and you buy it and take it home? Did you ever do that?
No.
I did this so many times, but you would listen to so many tracks that you were like, eh. And then something that was like, okay, was like, wow, this is sick, and you take it home, you're like, why did I buy this? It's kind of the same thing with this music. So now I'm at the point where I know exactly my brain's going to listen to something that's okay and think, wow, that's insane.
Yeah.
So I have this folder which I put everything in, and then I wait till next day to listen to it, and then I listen to everything again. I'm like, no. So yeah, that's the kind of the process that goes on with that. But yes.
How many releases have you had?
Ooh, I don't know. We released compilations through Circus. Actually, DPMO compilations. We just released DPMO 4. I think it was beginning of this year or end of last year. So we've had 4 compilations. That was like 20 plus tracks each one. But those have been going on since 2017. And then we released DPMO 4 on my own label this year. So we've got 4 compilations. And I think we've got like our 7th EP coming out or something. So nothing too crazy. We're kind of moving. I'm just trying to find the best people that are like the core artists for the label, best representatives, best underground. It's basically an underground artist label. We're not signing anyone specifically yet. It's kind of like,
yeah,
if it's good music, it comes out. It doesn't matter if you've got a management. It doesn't matter if you've got one follower or 1 million. You know, yeah, it's just if it's a sick track, it comes out. So that was the basic of it.
That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, the scene needs it, man. There's like, yeah, in this day and age where YouTube has a million tutorials on how to make music, there is a million kids with so much passion to make music that have all this talent, and it's just the tracks just don't go out anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So have you signed, how many people have you signed? Have you signed anyone?
Probably, it's got to be over 100 at this point. Probably.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we've done 4 compilations of 20 tracks plus on each one.
So that it's all new music?
Brand new, yeah. I mean, the first one was full of release music because we couldn't find enough good unreleased music, and we were still trying to build the brand. So we didn't have the opportunity to go, hey, we're doing a compilation, here's an email, like I do now. I know I get loads of submissions. Back then, it was like, I'm starting the label, and it was like, no one responds. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to my DJ mates, like, do you want to release this? Do you want to release this? Like, oh, do you want to release on my new compilation, sort of thing?
Yeah.
So we had loads of releases on there to help promote it, but also some new stuff. So it was kind of a mix on the first one, but then everything after that has been dubplates, basically.
Wow.
So, yeah.
For you.
Thanks.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's because it's something I've always wanted. I've always wanted my own label, and I've always wanted my own clothing label, and I've always wanted my own brand.
So you design kind of, the clothes?
Most of them, yeah. There's a few I've had made by other people, but generally it's all mine. Yeah, I'm the creative.
Wow.
Yeah, I've always been like this. If you ever speak to Swanee or Crafty, they will literally tell you that I've always been this way, to be honest. Yeah. But now it's finally formulating into something. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm happy. It's something I get to watch that's mine, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like I pay a team to do it, you know? Because there's a sense of, is it yours in that sense?
And also it's why you're doing it. Like, you're doing it because it's obviously what you want to do.
Yeah,
and you
exactly.
love it.
Yeah, you should always go head on at your passions, because that's what, if they materialise, then you'll have a happy life.
Yeah, definitely. So, lockdown.
Yeah, here we go. So I'm gonna. So just before you carry on, the reason that I'm on this podcast today, for anyone listening, is because I listened to your podcast while I was on tour in America a week ago or something, and I was sat in an airport bored.
Did you?
Yeah, and I was playing my Switch, but I was listening to your podcast with Crafty, and it, Crafty said, obviously you had the whole talk about what's been going on in lockdown and what happened with his with Maximum Boost, but he did say we should do this in a year's time, and on no joke, it was like a week before the exact year. From
no
what
way.
He so I looked at it and I was like, what the hell? So I messaged Crafty like, we should do this, but let me in. I want to be involved as well, because I'd love to get involved.
Yeah.
And then you were like, well, let's do one as well. So now we've got a whole. So yeah, this is the sort of catch up. So what life's been like? So we're out of Corona, guys.
We're out.
Like, it's here, but it's, you know, we're out. We're doing stuff. We're moving. We're leaving our houses.
Paying attention to it anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
It's just not, we can go out now and deal with it.
Yeah.
But so, obviously, you, as a DJ, everything shut down, didn't it? So
completely. In every single way.
How did it affect you?
Were
you all right?
It was all right. It was annoying because I just finished a world tour and I'd had the money for a house. So I haven't bought a house yet. At this tender age, this young age of 30. And I was like desperate to get a house. And I'd finally got a deposit there, like from this tour. And I was like, right, this is going out.
Yeah.
Boom, Corona. And then just chomp, 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 chomp. And all my money just went. All my deposit money went through Corona, just bills and payments and things like that. So,
So
that kind of killed that off. So luckily, my girlfriend being the smart female she is, because, you know, men are idiots. And I will contest to that because I am one. I didn't save until just before Corona. She made me save. And then I had the money. The savings I had kept me alive in Corona. So
yeah,
if I'd had to work a job, God knows if I'd still be able to do front case stuff, to be honest. So yeah, but I had savings and that went. But I'm back on the road now. But my lockdown.
Do you know people that weren't all right? That haven't, like, didn't have any savings and had to go out and get proper jobs? Or do everyone, you know, kind of managed to...
Producer-wise, everyone used their abilities in some way. Like, for me, I'm an entertainer, I'm a gamer, but I'm also a producer. So I did a lot of lessons with people for money. And I mixed down someone's album. I did mastered someone's album, engineered it.
Oh, nice.
That was some band's album. And I did loads and loads of stuff like that, which is sort of twinned around my job, which is to produce music, but also my entertainment side, which is what I like to do on stage, was then put to Twitch, and I ended up being a game streamer.
Yes, so come on, tell us about that.
Yeah, I knew that would come to it.
So have you always played games?
Yeah, literally since I was young. Yeah, literally. My mum bought me my first Super Nintendo when I was, I don't know, 7, 6, like that. Shows how old I am. But I played Street Fighter 2 every day of my life until I got my next game, whenever it was. But I just played it over and over again, and I've always been a gamer. But this translated into COVID with streaming. And the thing was that I was touring, even before Corona, I was touring, and I was playing games between touring. I would make music, and then I would play games at night. So one day I went, why don't I just turn the camera on and just people watch me play games? Because I'm pretty good at games, so...
Yeah.
That's what I did. So I turned my camera on, and suddenly I started getting paid. People were subscribing to me, and I was like, what? I'm getting paid to play games? What is this? So that's what happened. And then Corona happened, and I was like, what the hell am I going to do with it? It's like, I hope this doesn't last too long. You know, obviously it lasted years. So but my first thought was just do streaming, just stream for a bit until it's over, and then we'll go back on tour. And obviously that lasted for a long time. So, but the streaming thing was a blessing because I was getting paid, and that was kind of offsetting the main of the costs that was coming out of my accounts at the time. So
it's amazing, isn't it, that kind of you managed to switch over and it was quite easy.
Yeah.
Were you going on every day?
I did it Friday, 10:30 PM till roughly around 3 AM every single day.
Oh wow!
I do that now, and I still do that now. Yeah, between touring. Yeah. That's why when I spoke to you. You were like, what time did you wake up? I'm like, it's not in the mornings. But the reason is because of the American market. The Americans are my main fan base.
Okay.
And so I cater for the American market because obviously UK dubstep is basically dead. I mean, there's lovers there and but promoters won't book us. So, you know, there's no market for it. Europe is good, but it's ahead of us. So if I streamed earlier, I'd have to hope that the Europeans come in. But the main of my market is America. So I stream to America.
Yeah.
It's just about... not too late for the English and the Europeans to come in, but it's a good time for the Americans to come in. So it's like kind of in my head, the best time. So
people just pay to watch you play video games.
Yeah. I mean, it's optional. There's no problem with it. I mean, Twitch, if you don't subscribe to me, Twitch forces adverts before you watch me play. You have to watch 30 seconds of adverts.
Yeah.
And then that can get tiring. It's like me. I've just bought YouTube Premium, and I used to watch adverts over and over again, but now I bought Premium because I'm sick of the adverts, but it's the best thing ever. I can't lie.
Yeah.
But you get to support someone. Eventually, you get so engulfed in the streamer and what they're doing and stuff, and you get so involved that you just subscribe.
And then, it's just my kids watch.
Twitch.
People watch.
Yeah, yeah.
People play games. But I'm just like, because it's not my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, why would you? But I don't know. Obviously, people love it. But that, I mean, what do you talk about?
It's a support. The thing is,
do you talk when you play the game?
It can vary. The thing is you're supporting the streamer. So obviously, there's the reward of the fact that you know that you're helping the streamer out. If it's someone who's got like, I don't know, like it's tens of thousands of subs and they're making tons of money, then there's no, you know, if you get supportive of that streamer, you're just helping pay them more money. But for lower down streamers, you're literally giving them a platform to keep twitching. So that's what helps. But I was telling this to my stream yesterday. I stream nearly 100 hours every month, and they're paying $5 for 100 hours. You couldn't get a plumber to check a pipe for 5 seconds for that kind of money. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I'm not comparing myself to a plumber because that's a skilled thing, but in our world, $5 for 100 hours is insanity.
Yeah.
And some people don't even subscribe. So it's like...
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just that element. But also you get little things like you can have like emotes you can use in chat. And sometimes they're funny to use in certain situations. And only subscribers get those and that sort of stuff. So it depends. But some people do initiatives in their streams as well. So you'll get like... You get three different tiers on Twitch. You can do $5, $10 or $25.
Yep.
Tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. And some streamers say, if you tier 3 with me, I'll play a game with you or I'll check out your music. Okay. Or, you know, that sort of stuff. They do have the initiative. Yeah. So there's different ways of doing it. So
Yeah.
So I do the same sort of thing.
Wow. How many people follow you?
I have 14,000 on Twitch, which is, by the way, and Twitch numbers for streamers who aren't proper big streamers is good numbers. Like, people see people who have like 100, let's say you get 100 viewers on Twitch. That's a pretty good number in Twitch, right? Because there's so many Twitchers. But people see 100 and they think that's low. That's a good number in Twitch because there's so many streamers. Attention spans are clicking through streamers constantly. So when you've got a consistent number, it's a good number. So I average around 50 to 100. And I've been doing that consistently since Corona. But that fluctuates based on what I'm doing. So if I'm playing games, it's usually about that number. But if I'm doing music streams, it's more. It can be up to 200. Or if I'm doing streams where I'm mixing music, it can be up to over 1,000 people. And I did one stream where I was playing. So Lost Lands is that festival I was talking about earlier. It's like the biggest basshead festival in America. They did an online one during Corona where they got all a bunch of artists, kind of like exactly like a festival. They got a whole lineup and then they created this whole 3D environment and they got the DJ to DJ in front of a green screen on their mobile phone, record their set and then send the footage. And then they cut the DJ out through the green screen and put him in the 3D environment. So it looks like you were on stage in a 3D environment. It was kind of cool.
Wow.
And it was like insane 3D visuals and that sort of stuff. But then people got to donate to the artist to keep him afloat and that sort of stuff. So I did that and I did a watch party for that. And I had 1,200 people watching me. And I got donated like, I don't know, like 100 subs. It's $500. I was donated like 500 subs in one stream.
Wow.
So it was insanity. So that's a lot of money that people donated, you know, so...
But yeah, it's nice that people did because it was really hard for artists. It was really hard for everyone that, you know, had to be out in the world to earn money and suddenly couldn't.
Yeah,
and
it was a complete shutdown.
You know,
it was a complete cut off in every single, not in every single way, but in pretty much most of the sense. Like my main money is touring. I don't do Spotify numbers that generates me enough money to keep me afloat. I do Spotify numbers, which pays the rent maybe for 3 months, you know. So like it's just... I have to DJ to keep myself alive, basically. So DJing, then it's just that, like, it's like cutting off all your arms and legs and having half your torso. Like, how do I live with that? You know, I'm trying. I'm bouncing around. I'm trying to do washing up my nose. You know, it's that sort of thing. So it's like I'm living, but it's a tough living.
It's so different. Yeah.
That's what I mean.
And it was just completely out of the blue as well. So I'm just going to let my cat in. I told you.
Oh, that's right. The cat. Sponsored by Maximum Boost. What's the cat's name?
Panda.
Panda?
Yeah,
you must be the only person on Earth who has a cat called Panda.
He was named, he wasn't named by us, he was named by it was my youngest daughter's friend at nursery. Her cat, Hello Kitty, had kittens and we got Panda and Luna, but sadly Luna went off one day and never came back.
Oh yeah, cat that do be cat sometimes.
I'm still hoping, I mean, it's been... I think he's going to be 4 this year, so it would be 3 years.
So,
when she was one.
Mentioning that, when we lived in my mum's first flat in Bournemouth, there was a cat we had called Benji, and he disappeared. And I'm not joking, this is complete, utter truth. He came back on her birthday every year. After 3 years, he came back once, randomly, and he'd come back on her birthday. But I think he did it 3 times, and then we never saw him again. He would just turn up on her birthday... We were like, Benji, what the hell? And we were like, oh my God, it's Benji, he's back. And then he disappeared, and then he'd come back again on her birthday. I'm not joking, my mum would literally tell you this. Like, yeah, really crazy. It's either the most insane coincidence or he knew.
But
he went away for 2-3 years and came back. So there's always hope. There's always hope. Yeah, he's probably just walking on everyone's fences, eating whatever he can. And one day he'll just go, oh, I could do it with a bit of warmth, you know? I'll go back there. I'll travel 5 miles wherever I am, you know, so...
That's amazing.
Yes, cats are pretty insane for that sort of stuff, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they're very wild animals. I've got 3 cats.
3 cats?
3 cats, accidentally. So my girlfriend, who loves cats, as you can tell, we got our first cat because we were kind of like, I was on tour a lot and my girlfriend wanted some company. So she was like, why don't we get a cat? So therefore, I'm not going to be so... lonely when you're on tour all the time. I've got someone to look after and that sort of stuff. So we've got a cat. We've got a rescue cat. We called it Gizmo. She's like black and white, furriest, angriest cat you've ever met. But also the most lovable cat. In 1 minute, she'll be the most cuddly cat you've ever seen and be purring loud. And the next minute, she'll be scratching your face off. She's so bipolar. But she was found in a bin. She was found in a bin with one other kitten and the mother. So they were rescued from a bin. So she's probably got PTSD or something. I don't know. But yeah, so we got her. And then about 2 years later, 2-3 years later, a friend of my mum's called Gary, he was He did a status saying, can anyone look after my cats? I need to go to a festival and I don't want to leave them at home on their own. I'm kind of worried about them. So my mum, I think she put a status out about it, and my girlfriend said, oh yeah, we'll do it. That sounds cool, because they're young cats, they're kittens. That's cute. Well, I love kittens. Gizmo's grown up 2 years old now. I want more kittens. I miss kittens. You know, it's like when mothers have babies and they want, oh, I wish it was still a baby. So we got the cats. And then as soon as we got the cats home, he went, you can keep them if you want. And it turned out he couldn't look after them.
Okay.
And he was basically, it was a ploy for him to, someone take the cats, please take the cats. Yeah. And then shortly after he actually passed away, he committed suicide. So it was, he obviously must have been just worried about them. He was like, I can't, if I do this, I'm not going to leave them on their own. So that kind of, it's a sad story, but it's also good because they you know, we've got them. They're lovely cats. They're part of family. But yeah, we got them accidentally. But yeah, that's what happened there. So yeah, but that was during Corona. So yeah, it was just, you know, part of the crazy time. They were, and funny enough, one of them was called Luna as well.
Luna, wow, what does she look like?
Luna and Loki, black and white, a little bit of a, she looks like she looks like Batman. She's got like that mask stuff going on, and like the bottom half's white, and then the top half's black. It's really cool. But yeah, she's got a miserable look on her face. And then the other one's called Loki. We renamed them to Eevee and Ninja. So they're Eevee and Ninja now.
So yeah, that was the lovely Funkos. I hope you enjoyed it, and there is more to come next week. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, then hi, thank you for listening. I've got loads of other really good episodes with all different kinds of people. Last week I had the gorgeous Bea Ducks on talking about her work in the sex industry. Weirdly, as I'm recording this now, she talks a lot about how Instagram censors people, and her Instagram account's gone. So I don't know if Instagram listened to the podcast and thought, right, we know what we're going to do with you. But yeah, I'm yet to speak to her. I just know that it's not there at the moment. So, I mean, I'm hoping for her sake that it's a glitch and they haven't got rid of her account, because the amount of effort and time people put into building their social media presence and then to have it just all taken from you anyway. But yeah, listen to her podcast because it's really good. I've got so many good chats with people. I had Rosca on, if you're here because of the DJ, and then yeah, I did a podcast with Rosca a little while ago. I am trying to get my mate Wookie on, but he said he was going to do it and then he changed his mind, but I will work on him because he can talk. I think he talks more than anyone I've ever met, but he's really interesting because he's been around for a long time because he's really old, but yeah, he's got some really good stories. But yeah, so thank you for listening. Check out my other episodes, subscribe to the podcast so it just arrives in your phone every week like magic. It's not just about parenting, but I do obviously talk about kids and parenting because I'm a mother. But yeah, there's loads of stuff. Just have a little check out. Also, I do something called the Epic Mum Chat with my lovely friend Nikki, which is on YouTube. We've not posted an episode for a few weeks because we've just all been a bit under it, but another one will come soon. But yeah, big love to you all. Stay safe, stay sane, and I'll see you next week. Bye!
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.